since I have been here last, 2 weeks ago, I was in California myself for 5 days, and then I came back here to change clothes, and I went to South Carolina. So I just came back from South Carolina. It is good to be home. You have to pass through a lot of places. I haven't been on a single airplane that was on time in 2 weeks. That's the way the weather's been. And it's still that way, apparently. Always good to be home. You have to pass through a lot of places. Today, I want to talk about passing through a place that no one passed through back in those days. They just didn't do it. Samaria. And I'll take you there in a moment. First, let me tell you what happened to me just a few years ago. In the past few years, there's just been so many divine appointments. And I have to tell you, on this side of them, sometimes I don't know. I'm kind of dreading it, or it doesn't look too good. You know, it's kind of like looking from a stained glass window outside of it and inside of it. It just looks a lot better when the light comes through. So I'm coming home from a memorial service in Granbury, Texas, south of Fort Worth, from a memorial service for a teenage boy who died of cancer. And oh my goodness, there were hundreds of kids in that service, almost all of them high school, his parents and some other people that were there. It was just, it was very difficult. I'd spend some time with his family that afternoon trying to encourage them and comfort them about heaven. And so I just kind of dreaded going, but I did the best I could. I'm coming home and it's about 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm driving down I-45 home. Pasadena, and I'm going through Madisonville on I-45, and I look in the rearview mirror and see flashing lights. And to say the least, I'm not excited about that. And I'm trying to think, well, I'm not speeding. I wasn't weaving. I don't know. So I pull over, of course, and I get my license out and my insurance card. And the young state trooper comes up. I roll down the window and I said, "Yes, officer. Is there something wrong?" And he said, "Yes, your light is not working above your license." And I said, "Oh, it isn't. I'm sorry. I'll have to get that fixed." He said, "Would you step out of the car, please?" I said, "Yes." So I went back, and we stood between his patrol car and my car, and he's talking. He went to check my license. He's come back. He gives it to me and my insurance, and he says, "You need to get that fixed." I said, "Yes, sir. I'll take care of it when I get back." He said, "What are you doing up at 2 o'clock in the morning?" I told him I was a pastor. And he said, I said, "Well, I was coming from this memorial service for this young boy who died of cancer." "Oh," he said. "Where was that?" I said, "Granbury." "Where do you live?" "Pasadena." He said, "Well, I'm so sorry that happened." And I said, "I want to thank you for your service. I know you're just doing your job, and it's got to be a lonely time out here in the middle of the night pulling people over like me who, you know, could be dangerous." He said, "Yes, I see a lot of people I think are dangerous." He said, it is a tough job." I said, "Well, thank you for your service." He said, "Is preaching all you do?" I said, "No, I've written some books." "What books?" I said, "Well, I wrote a book called 90 Minutes in Heaven." "Oh, I've heard about that book. I want to get that." I said, "Well, I happen to have some in the car, but I don't know if giving you one is the right thing to do." And he said, no, our business is finished. I'd be happy to get a book." So I said, "All right." So I opened up the back, you know, so I drive a Tahoe, and the thing comes back up, and I reach in the box and get him a book, and I sign it, and I said, "What's you and your wife's name?" I sign it, I hand him the book, and I said, "Well, I never give that book to somebody and say, 'I hope you enjoy it.' I usually say, 'I hope it's meaningful to you.'" And he said, "Well, thank you very much. I'll read it right away." I said, "Well, God bless you, what you do. Be safe." And so I'll get that light fixed. I reach over, pull the door down on my Tahoe, and the minute it slammed, the light came on above the license plate. He looked at me, I looked at him, we looked at that, we looked at each other again. He said, "Wow." 2 weeks later, I got an email on my Facebook page, and my wife read it to me. It was from his wife, who said, "You'll never know what that book meant to my husband. It was a life changer for him. It really was." You know, we have divine appointments sometimes. We don't know what they're going to be on the other side. Sometimes it's on purpose. Jesus had a divine appointment. He's going through Samaria, and it's in John chapter 4, 1 through 30. We won't read all those verses. We don't have time because Jimmy wants us out of here at 1:15. Nah, it's not going to happen. He's not here, so we can do whatever we want. You know, Moses had a burning bush. Gideon had an angel. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they had a fiery furnace. And so they were divine appointments. They had to go through that to get to where they were going to be, and sometimes that's exactly what happens. Jesus has decided to go through Samaria, and you probably know no Jew went through Samaria. There were three routes from Judea to Galilee, and so he took the one that no one ever took, but he had an appointment. He was going to see somebody there. Jews just didn't do that. And this, I know this sounds crazy, but it's something that's so contemporary. I mean, the Jews hated the Samaritans because they were mixed race. They were only part Jew. They had mixed with another group, and that was unclean. You know, the rules they have even about food. This food can't come into contact with this because it makes it unclean. And so the man who carried the cross for Christ didn't want to do it because, not because he didn't want to carry the cross specifically, but because he would be unclean and he wouldn't be able to do what he came there to do, which is celebrate the Passover with his two boys. So unclean was a big deal, and the Samaritans were unclean. I mean, the Jews would even buy vegetables and fruit and all kinds of things from Gentiles. They would never buy anything from the Samaritans. The Pharisees, when they walked down the street, they would close their eyes when they saw a woman coming, and they were called the black and blue Pharisees because they were always running into things. So not only would they not go through Samaria, they wouldn't look at women in the broad daylight. They wouldn't even speak to their own wives and their own daughters in public. That was their rules. Here's Jesus going through Samaria on purpose, speaking to a woman in broad daylight because he knows it's the divine appointment. And so he does it. And here's a piece of video. The audio is not very good, but I didn't intend to play it in front of a bunch of people.
The saying holds true. One sows and the other reaps. I sent you to reap for that which you do not labor. Others have labored and you have entered into their labor. This is the payoff here. It says, many Samaritans from that city believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I've ever done, she said. So when the Samaritans came to him, they asked him to stay with them. And he stayed there 2 days. Stay here 2 days. Here 2 days. And many more believed because of his word. And they said to the woman, it is no longer because of what you said that we believe, for we have heard for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we know that this is truly the Savior of the world. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that happened right here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm standing at the well in Samaria speaking to a group of people. It's the right well. It's the one. It's Jacob's well. A lot of things in Israel are places where we think this happened. This is not where we think this happened. This is the well. It's about 3 stories down. You have to go down because over the centuries, dirt, rubble, things have built up around it. It's a church over the top of it, like a church over the top of everything in Israel. And there is Jacob's well. And so I'm at the place where this happened, and I'm talking to these people. It's kind of a small room down there. There's a monk there that sells water from the well. Let's look at this picture. Here it is. There's the crank that cranks the bucket up from the bottom of the well, and people drink from the well. It's a well. It's the same well where Jesus stood and talked to this woman. So that's this divine appointment that he's doing now. And of course, nobody would have ever talked to a woman in the broad daylight, no matter who they were. It's a Samaritan woman in the broad daylight, and she is a woman who has a pretty checkered past, to say the very least. Jesus asked her for some water. I like to have some water. And she's just stunned. You know, you're asking me for water? I can't even believe you're talking to me. You're obviously a Jew. She could tell by the way he was dressed, his beard. She knew he was Jewish. And you want water from me? Yes. Yes. And then in verse 9, she essentially says, if you knew who I was, you wouldn't be asking me for water. I mean, you wouldn't be asking for a drink. So she's really actually being critical of him. How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. That is an understatement. I mean, it's really an understatement. She's understating how powerful this is. And Jesus answers in verse 10 of chapter 4 and said to her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that saves you, give me a drink, says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would give you living water. Living water. So she's confused now. She doesn't really know what she's talking about. But she does know this. And you'll find this in life so many times, whether it's a state trooper who pulls you over because your light's not working, or somebody that you encounter in life, at work, in your neighborhood. You'll find out that in many cases, there's a divine appointment there if you'll just be sensitive and notice what's going on. So she says to him, sir, give me this water so I will not be thirsty. She doesn't really understand what kind of water she's offering, but if it's a water that makes you not have to walk a half a mile from Sychar into the Jacob's well to get water, she wants that, especially in the daytime. She's come in the daytime because the other women wouldn't dare come. So she's just not avoiding anyone. She's avoiding the other women who won't have anything to do with her, I can guarantee you, because of what she does. But Jesus knows all about her. It's not just a simple case of drinking some water and you become a Christian or a follower of Jesus. There's some conviction has to take place, and so here it is. It's about to take place. He says, go get your husband. Well, he knows her situation. And she says, honestly, I have no husband. And so he proceeds to tell her about her five previous husbands and the man she's living with. Well, she's stunned by this. I mean, anybody would, standing at a well that's not even supposed to talk to you, and now they're telling you all about your life, how many husbands you've had, and I mean, he knows her life. And he's talking to her anyway, because he needs to. He went there on purpose. It was a divine appointment. So she admits her sin. He puts her in a situation where she has to admit that she is wrong. Verse 17, I have no husband. Jesus says, I know that. As a matter of fact, you've had five of them, and the man that you're with now is not your husband, because you've just given up on marriage. You're living with this man, and you don't know what love is. Well, she didn't. He does, and he wants to love her. He wants to love her into his kingdom. He wants to show her the way. She was looking for a temporal solution to an eternal problem, and oh my goodness, we have a world like that, don't we? We're looking for solutions. People are looking for reasons. They're looking for solutions. We're about to have another election, and there's like 300 people running for president or something like that. And you know what they're going to offer you? All kinds of solutions. Temporal solutions. A lot of the problems that we're trying to solve are not, they're not earthly problems. They're human problems. We've had them since the beginning of time. So, he tells her what she needs to do. And I love this, down in verse 24. She's explaining to him theology, to Jesus. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. And then the woman says in verse 25, I know that the Messiah is coming, who is called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things. Well, here's the payoff. She knows what she needs to do. And how many people do that you encounter every day? They know what they need to do. They just can't quite bring themselves to do it. Well, Jesus is passing by on purpose in the place where you are. And here's what he says. I who speak to you am he. I am. How many times is that in the Bible in different places? I am. Lady, you're looking at it. I am the Messiah. I am the Christ. I'm the one you've been looking for. Wow. A woman in broad daylight, a Samaritan woman at that, Jesus goes out of his way to go to that place to talk to that woman so that she might be saved, because he knows what she's going to do. Those verses I was reading at Jacob's well or what happens next. She goes back to town and tells everybody. I love this. It's often overlooked. She left her water jug there. She didn't really need that to go back and tell people about the living water, Jesus. And essentially, the whole town hears about Jesus because this one woman goes out to the well in the broad daylight to get some water. And Jesus says, I've got living water for you. And I know what you've been doing, and I know what you've done. You've been looking for a Messiah to turn the page. I am He. It's a divine appointment, ma'am. And she went back and proceeded to tell everybody, to the point that they weren't even listening to her anymore. They wanted to hear Jesus. And I love what the disciples did. This is great. Verse 27. And at this point, his disciples came, and they marveled that he talked with a woman, yet no one said, what do you seek, or why are you talking to her? At least they were discreet enough to say, wait a minute, it's Jesus. Let him go. He knows what he's doing. And he did. They learned more from that, watching him do that, than anything else. He didn't have to teach them anything. They watched him. They learned from him. They knew. Years ago, I was speaking in Germany. Not just any place in Germany. I was speaking in what used to be East Germany, Chemnitz. I don't want to embarrass him, but my son Chris was with me. He's sitting right there. This church had not been spoken in years because it was behind the Iron Curtain. It was turned into a museum like most of those places over there. The town during the occupation was what? Karl Marxstadt? That's what they changed the town to, Karl Marxstadt. If you go to that town today, there's an enormous bust of Karl Marx sitting downtown in what used to be East Germany, or Germany before that, then East Germany, and now Germany again. I'm invited to speak to that church. I'm go to a chateau where we're going to stay, and we hadn't been there for just maybe 5 minutes, and then we were ushered into a side room. Like, what is this? Well, there were some refreshments in there, and a kind of a committee that was welcoming us to come to that town and speak, and very excited to do that. But I hadn't been there 2 minutes in that room until a very kind of excited woman kind of walked up to my face, and she said, she didn't say hello, guten tag, how are you? She looked at me and she said, did your father fight in the war? I said, as a matter of fact, my father did fight in the war in Germany. She said, mine did too. We were so wrong. It was so wrong. I said, yes, ma'am, it was a brutal and difficult war. They were doing their jobs. They were in the army. They had to do them. I know, she said, but it was so wrong. I said, I understand. She says, I want you to watch something. I thought, Lord, have mercy, where is this going? I just got here, and she's asking me, my father fought was in the American army, and her father was in the Wehrmacht, the German army. So she takes me over to a laptop, and she's going to show me some videos. She sets it up this way. She says, we kill Jews by the millions, and we've been trying to atone for that ever since, trying to get right with God. She said, we're Christians. We invited you here. We want you to preach. We want you to tell people how to get to heaven. I said, yes, ma'am, I plan to do that. She said, well, we're trying to be good witnesses too. And in so many ways, she was saying we had a divine appointment. She said, we knew that we had been so wrong. There are Jews here in Germany now, and we want to do right by them. So we collected money, a lot of money. I said, well, that's good. She said, I want you to watch this. She begins to run a video of a bunch of kids, like teenagers and maybe a little bit older, dancing. And then she tells me, this is in Israel. This video we're watching is in Israel, like the one you watched at the beginning. And I'm watching it, Chris is watching it, we're all watching it. And they begin to dance. And then she tells me over the top of this, we paid for them to go there. They had never been to Israel, the country of their forefathers and foremothers. And we wanted them to enjoy this experience and go to the land of the people that were their heritage, generations of which we annihilated during the war. Untold millions. It's the least we can do. I said, yes, ma'am. It's phenomenal. It's amazing that she would do that. She says, watch this. And then, suddenly, the kids that were dancing, and in Jewish dances, they dance arm in arm around, and suddenly the kids started breaking up, and they were not connected anymore. And they all turned around to people who were obviously off camera, and it was these people in the room with me. It was the people who paid for those young Jewish people to go to Israel, and they were reaching out to them. Come, dance with us. Come dance with us. And they did. You could see them kind of reluctantly, and since they didn't know how to dance that way, put arms around these young Jewish people, and these German Christians are dancing around in a circle in Israel. And she says to me, I wanted you to know, we were so wrong, but we're trying to do something right now. I knew when I was there, it was a divine appointment. Yes, I did go preach. There were so many people there that night that they were standing outside looking through windows. When we gave an altar call, it went on for hours. We honestly were so overwhelmed we couldn't handle it. But I'll always remember that lady in a chateau outside of Chemnitz, in the former East German colony, who took me aside, and the first words she said to me is, did your father fight in the war? Yes, ma'am. He was in the American Army, and he was here. So was mine, she said. I think it was a divine appointment. I will never forget that. Those kids will never forget that. The people who were kind enough to see that they got to be in their homeland will never forget that. And what an unlikely place and an unlikely situation. I couldn't write it. I couldn't think it up. It just happened. I had no idea. I wanted to tell you today. Sometimes you pass through places that you don't know anything about. Maybe you may not even know the people, but it's all divine appointments. I have to ask you the question, who's waiting for you today to be sensitive enough to notice that you need to say something to them, that you need to talk to them, you need to share with them, you need to listen to them, because it's a divine appointment. You may have to peel away a few layers, but it's there, waiting for you. Oh my. I got pulled over because my light wasn't working on my license plate, and it was an opportunity to minister to a young man who needed it. I went to Germany, and I ended up listening to a woman talk about her dad and what they were trying to do to rectify some unspeakably horrors that had happened in the past. You don't have to go anywhere. It's right here in Pasadena. So I encourage you, as you go through Samaria, to be sensitive to the people around you and make it a divine appointment. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for our time together. Always, we never take it for granted. We thank you for the food. We thank you for our fellowship around the table. And we thank you for the fact that as we pass through Samaria or Judea or Galilee or Pasadena, that we're sensitive to the people around us who need to hear a good word from us. Lord, help us to be sensitive to that. Until we meet again, we offer this name in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.